Many scholars are buried in the Sahan of the Haram of Imam Ali alayhi salam, and some of them are Allama Hilli alayhim ar-Rahma, Muqaddas Ardabili alayhim ar-Rahma, Sheikh Murtaza Ansari alayhim ar-Rahma, and Sheikh Tusi alayhim ar-Rahma. Visit these places where they're buried, greet them, and ponder over their lives and see what you can gain from them. So we'll look at the lives of these four ulama. The first of them we'll look at is Allama Hilli, whose name was Abu Mansur Hassan ibn Yusuf al-Hilla. He was born on the 29th of Ramadan, 648 after Hijrah, in the town of Hilla. And the title Allama Hilli means the very learned one from Hilla. He was the nephew and student of Muhaqqiq Hilli, who another very well-known alim of ours, very amazing person. And then he proceeded to study from other masters of his era, including Khwaja Nasiruddin Tusi, whose life we will look at. And Khwaja taught him philosophy and logic. And he also sat with the other schools of thought from the Muslim community to study their fiqh. He was a child genius. He attained the position of being a mujtahid at the age of 9 to 10 years. When he was a very young child, he was still naughty. And once when he was chased by his tutor, that is his uncle, Muhaqqiq Hilli, he used to recite the ayat of wajib sajda, and his uncle would have to stop and do sajda whilst he ran away. He was not baligh, so it wasn't obligatory on him to do the sajda. There's an incident about him where once as a child he was playing outside the masjid while his father, a mujtahid, was inside with some mu'mineen. And an old man came out crying. And Allama asked him, what was the reason for his grief? And he said, you know what? Your father has said that I have to repay 50 years of my salah because I had been coming early to the mosque and I was doing wudu for salat al-dhuhr and asr with the knee of wajib before the time of salah had set in. Now, this was the fatwa that was issued by Allama's father. Incidentally, most marja don't view it in the same way today. Well, Allama Hilli told him, you know what? You only have to pray one day's qada. And the old man was a bit perplexed, and he called Allama's father. And Allama Hilli tells this to his father, that the qadha salah was wajib on the old man every day since he first did his wudu niyyah incorrectly. Therefore, every day when he prayed with wudu of wajib niyyah, he was praying the previous day's qadha salah. So really, he had only one day to pray, and it was logic that this child used. Many a time he would debate with the ulama of the other schools of thought, and he was respected by them all. There's an incident again once when the sultan of the time had divorced his much-loved wife three times after a petty argument. You see, in other sects of Islam, you're allowed to divorce one's wife three times in one sitting. We cannot do that. And then the husband cannot remarry his ex-wife unless she has married another man and he divorces her. So the sultan was distraught and he called the ulama of all the different schools of thoughts. When none could help him, he asked if there was any more schools of thought in Islam. And they told him, well, there are the tashayyu. And he summoned Allama Hilli. Allama Hilli first entered the sultan's court with his shoes under his armpit, and he sat down without bowing down to the sultan. And the other ulama ridiculed him on having no etiquette. So Allama said, in your religion as well as mine, to bow down in front of anyone other than Allah is not advisable. As for my shoes, he says, I'm holding them because I've heard that during the time of the Prophet, the Hanafis used to steal shoes. So I decided to bring mine in. The Hanafi ulama were enraged. They said, you know something? You don't even know from where the Hanafi school of thought started. It didn't even exist at the time of the Prophet. It started 100 years after his wafat. So Allama said, I'm really sorry. It must be the Malikis who stole the shoes then. And the Maliki said, we too did not exist at the time of the Prophet. So Allama said, then it must be the Hanbalis. And the Hanbali ulama denied existing at the time of the Prophet. And Allama said, it must be the Shafi'is. And the Shafi said, what nonsense. None of our sects existed during the time of the Prophet. So Allama Hilli turned to the Sultan and he said, you've heard that none of these schools of thought existed during the time of the Prophet. I am from those who follow the Imam who was with the Prophet ﷺ all the way. Rendering the others dumbfounded, he explained that three divorces in one sitting was not permissible and therefore remarriage to his ex-wife was permissible. Allama's works include so many books and treatises on fiqh, on usul, on kalam, on logic, on philosophy and rijal. We know of at least 100 books written by him. And you know what? We still have some of the manuscripts with us. And each book portrays his genius. One in particular is called Tabsiratul Muta'allimin, and it's still being studied by the students of the Islamic seminaries, or the hawzas as they call them today. You find the latter-day fuqaha or scholars have written extensive commentaries on the works of Allama Hilli. He died on the 21st of Muharram, 726 after Hijrah, at the age of 78, and he is buried in the Sahan in Najaf. Let's look at another alim, and this is Muqaddis Ardabili. His name was Ahmad bin Muhammad Ardabili, and his name Muqaddis Ardabili means the Holy One, Quddus, Holy One from Ardabil. Remember the ulama, when you have their names, if it says Ardabili, then he came from the town of Ardabil. Allama Hilli came from Hilla, so his name is Allama Hilli. You have Sayyid Sistani from Sistan, therefore his name is Sistani. So in Ardabil, he was also known as Muhakkik Ardabili, which means the investigator of Ardabil. And his piety was just awesome. You know, let me give you an example from his life. He was once traveling from traveling between Samarra, Karbala, and Najaf. And whenever he traveled, he used to travel on a hired donkey. Once he was given a letter to deliver to someone in Najaf on his way back from Karbala. And people got really worried because he didn't arrive in Najaf at the expected time. Many, many hours later, he arrived exhausted because he was walking with the donkey. And when he was asked about the delay, he said, you know what, I've walked all the way because I haven't got permission from the owner of the donkey to carry the extra weight of the letter. That was the piety of Muqaddis Ardabili. He was highly respectable by all. Shah Abbas Safavi of Iran wanted him to come and live in Iran, but Ahmad Ardabili would not agree. There's another incident about once there was a mu'min from Iran who came to Muqaddis Ardabili in Najaf asking him to write to the Shah recommending a pardon. And Muqaddis Ardabili wrote a letter saying, the holder of temporary rule, Abbas, is advised that although the man was initially a wrongdoer, he now seems to be oppressed. If you forgive him, Allah may forgive some of your lapses. And he wrote, signed from the slave of the master of wilaya, Imam Ali al-Islam, Ahmad Ardabili. And the Shah replied, I bring to your esteemed notice that Abbas has done the service ordered by you, feeling deeply obliged. I hope you will not forget this devotee of yours in your du'as. And he signed from a dog on the threshold of Ali al-Islam, Abbas. He was such an awesome man. It is said that he wore his amama. He wore really large amamas. And when he was asked, why do you wear such large amamas? And he said, you never know. When I meet people who have no clothes, when I meet people who need a covering, I take off my amama and I am able to share the cloth with them. Muqaddis Ardabili actually strengthened the Hawza in Najaf, and he is the leading marja after Shahid Thani. He died in Najaf in Safar of 993 after Hijrah, and he's buried in the Sahan. Sit there, ponder over his life, and think about him. Then we have Sheikh Murtada Ansari, who was a descendant of the Prophet's companion, Jabir ibn Abdullah Ansari. He was born on the day of Eid al-Ghadir, 18th Dhul-Hijjah, in 1214 after Hijrah. Now, for 20 years, he studied in Iran before leaving for Iraq, and after a brief stay there, he decided to return to Iran. In 1249 after Hijrah, he decided to visit Iraq, he decided to do ziyarah just like you are, but liked it so much that he took up permanent residence in Najaf and he started his own classes, which made him world famous for it. He became an undisputed marja alim after the death of Muhammad Hassan Najafi, who is known as Sahib al-Jawahir. One thing about Sayyid Murtada Ansari was his memory and his resolution of intellectual problems. The speed with which he did it was absolutely awesome. He was a genius of extraordinary caliber. In usul and fiqh, his originality, his analytic mind just opened up a new path. And literally, it is this path of Sheikh Murtada Ansari that subsequent scholars have taken up. He had two great works, Rasail and Maqasib, and they're literally a major part of the curriculum in modern seminaries or modern houses as such. After Muhakkik Hilli, Allama Hilli, and Shahid Awal, Sheikh Murtaza Ansari towers highest among the Shia Fuqaha, and he's rightly known as Khatim al-Fuqaha wal-Mujtahideen. And there is one incident I remember about him whereby one day he was, when his mother died, he was sobbing and crying so much. His students came up to him and one in particular said, but she was an old woman. And, you know, you have taught us to accept things like that. Don't, you know, you're a scholar, you shouldn't be crying. He didn't answer the first time. The second time he said, do you know who this woman was? I am here. I am who I am because of this woman. And he taught his students on that day the status of a mom. His lifestyle was very, very simple. And on his death, he left about 70 Quran, which is approximately £3. He died in Najaf on the 18th of Jamadul Akhir, 1281 after Hijra. So he died at the age of 67. Let's look at Sheikh Tusi now, Sheikh Abu Ja'far Muhammad ibn Hassan Tusi, and he's also known as Sheikh Taifa. Just a note to say that there are two great ulama who bear the title Tusi. We will look at the other one, is Khwaja Nasiruddin Tusi. They're unrelated, both born in the Iranian city of Tus, but there's a difference of approximately 200 years between their eras. The personality we're going to look at, who is buried in the Sahan of the Haram of Imam Ali al-Islam, is Sheikh Abu Ja'far Muhammad ibn Hassan Tusi. His name was Muhammad ibn Hassan ibn Ali ibn Hassan, born in Ramadan 385 in the Iranian town of Tus. He was taught by his father at an early age in Tus, and it was in 408 after Hijra, which was when he was in his early 20s, that he moved to Baghdad and he became a student of Sheikh Mufid. When Sheikh Mufid died, he studied under Sayyid Murtada, who was known as Alam al-Huda, and he became his star student. After Sayyid Murtada died in 436 after Hijra, it was Sheikh Tusi who became the leading Shia alim and acknowledged at the marja of the Shia world. The enemies of the Ahlul Bayt during the reign of Qaim ibn Amr Allah were jealous of the progress made by the Shia ulama, in particular Sheikh Tusi. He was actually the brunt of all the jealousy, and they started influencing the Khalifa by saying that Sheikh Tusi was one of those who abused the first three Khalifas. And they produced the book of Amal called Al-Misbah and picked on Ziyarat Ashura, which says Lana on the first, second, and third, and fourth who committed injustices. Sheikh Tusi was called to the court and asked to explain. He said the first was Qabil. The second one was the one who killed the she-camel of Nabi Saleh. The third one was the killer of Nabi Yahya. And the fourth was Abdurrahman ibn Muljim, who struck Imam Ali alayhi salam with a fatal blow on the 21st of Ramadan. And the Khalifa was satisfied. Now, it was these sort of problems that arose at his time, and he dealt with them so well. Seeing that they couldn't succeed, the ulama of the other schools of thought who started this jealousy, started causing rifts with the general public. And this started the Sunni Shia riots in Baghdad in 448 after Hijra. Thousands of houses belonging to the Shia Tashayya were burnt down, including the house of Sheikh Tusi and his famous library, which has about 90,000 books. Remember, 80,000 were given to him by Sheikh Murtada. So much was destroyed. The riot spread to Qadhmain, and Sheikh Tusi decided to move to Najaf with some of his students. One of his students was his son, Sayyid Hassan. And Sheikh Tusi laid down the foundation of the Islamic seminary or knowledge in Najaf. He established the madrasas, and he made Najaf a flourishing learning center. Through him, so many have benefited. So many became mujtahideen. He is the author of two of the four main books of Ahadith, Al-Istibsar and Al-Tahadib. And, you know, the latter, the Al-Tahadib, contains 393 chapters. That's about over 13,000 Ahadith. So many other books. His authority and impact was so great that even after his death, for 80 years after his death, no alim gave any fatwa which was different from Sheikh Tusi. And another reason was that his book, Al-Nihaya, was disputed by some ulama from Baghdad. They came to Najaf to resolve the dispute, and they came to the haram of Imam Ali to ask for help. And all three of them saw Imam in their dreams, and he authorized the book. Sheikh Tusi had two daughters and one son. All became mujtahideen. His son, Sayyid Hassan, is known as Sheikh Mufid. the second, and his grandchildren became eminent scholars as well. There is no alim, even up till today, in any of the schools of thoughts who covered such wild fields of study as Sheikh Tusi has done. He died in Najaf at the age of 75, on the 22nd of Muharram, 460 after Hijrah, and he's buried in his home as per his wasiyya. The house was converted into a mosque, which is now incorporated into the Haram of Imam Ali alayhi salam. It's very difficult to identify the original mosque, but there's a gate of the Haram on this side, and it's known as Bab al-Tusi. Go there. Give his wasila. Ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to increase your knowledge as well.